The movie Passengers is about the very real possibility of traveling to a new home around another star, also known as an exoplanet. It's fascinating to discover the real science behind that, to see how astronomers are discovering exoplanets and finding ways that what we imagine could someday become a reality. Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang. As part of our Passengers movie series, today we're talking to John Bradford. Dr. Bradford is the COO of SpaceWorks. SpaceWorks is an Atlanta-based engineering firm that, in cooperation with NASA, is focused on the future of space exploration technologies. And Dr. Bradford has done specific work on the film Passengers, about the movie's depiction of exoplanets and human hibernation, all related to current research and projects at SpaceWorks. Dr. Bradford is joining us today to inform us of the realities behind some of the movie's themes and making all of this a reality. Join me in welcoming Dr. John Bradford.
Well, Dr. John Bradford, thanks so much for joining us today on the show.
Yeah, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, and here, by here, you mean SpaceWorks. And SpaceWorks has a contract with NASA, and it's through that contractual relationship that you've done some work on a new movie that's called Passengers, that is coming out next week. And we're happy to be talking to you, of course, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about your role there at SpaceWorks, and then maybe tell us a little bit about your role in advising on the new film Passengers.
Yeah, sure. SpaceWorks is an aerospace engineering firm that we delve into advanced concepts and new technologies. So NASA is one of our big customers. So we've been operating for about 15 years. So we have a number of different programs that are ongoing. One of those, I'm the principal investigator for, or they call me the fellow, and that's under NASA headquarters. The NIAC is the specific program, the NASA Innovative Advanced Concepts Program. And earlier this year, I received our phase two grant and funding to continue to mature that technology or that particular concept, which is basically to put people in a state of stasis, low metabolic stasis, to support long distance, long duration spaceflight. So this is a early program. So they call it part of their game changing, one of their game changing technologies or early stage innovation technologies stuff. So it's not part of the official plan or vision yet for how we're going to go to Mars, but they're going to invest a little bit in this area and see what it can do and if we can get a lot of benefit out of our particular approach to advancing human spaceflight.
I really think that it is fascinating that NASA is doing this work and that now movies like Passengers are involving people like you to explore idea of the real science behind the film. You know, we watched The Martian and, Andy Weir's book, and he was credited, certainly Andy Weir was credited for, you know, offering technical details that kind of satisfied this idea of hard science for fans. And now with your work in this idea of going to Mars has been around for a little while. And it sounds like work that you're doing might move us closer to actually heading on that long journey. And would you characterize it as kind of the same?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. And that's our kind of vision. So we've, as a company, have been exploring, you know, better, faster, cheaper ways to get to Mars. You know, how are we actually going to finally achieve this kind of dream, really, that's been out there for so long, mm-hmm. and with seemingly, you know, just very incremental progress and such. So we've been exploring this idea. And, you know, maybe the little distinction between in Passengers, you know, the primary motivation for putting people in this state is because of the long distance journey. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, traveling for, you know, 120 years through space, time frames that exceed the human lifetime capacity. So they're looking at for life extension purposes. And that's typically how we've seen it in science fiction and how it's been applied, your interstellar travel. So what we wanted to look at was, you know, first, is there any, how close are we to achieving that? And is there any benefit towards it for even short, for shorter duration travel? And so, you know, initially it's, you know, people are maybe not quite sure, why would you do that? You know, we got long, long ways before we travel, you know, outside of our solar system or even, you know, beyond Mars or the asteroid belt. You know, why would you invest in this technology? But we've been able to show from an engineering perspective all the benefits in terms of reduction in consumables. It takes a lot of food to sustain people, water, oxygen demands, and it takes a lot of space. They have to have a lot of room to move around and a lot of equipment to basically occupy their time in space. So it's 6 months is a one-way trip to Mars, you know, how long you're just kind of drifting and such. So it takes a lot to do that. We wanted to kind of minimize that amount of mass and consumables during that time period. And that has, we've shown, has a lot of benefits that we could leverage for early missions to Mars and maybe be one of the key technologies that enable us to finally achieve this. And then in the long term, I think we can hopefully continue to advance that technology. The approach may differ from where we're starting at now. We're leveraging what's kind of currently being done in medical practice for cases of traumatic brain injuries or cardiac arrest, where they cool the body down, give you kind of time to recover, put you in a kind of a deep sleep type state. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see how far we can actually push that technology. It's currently done for a couple of days with a few data points where they've gone up to 14 days or 2 weeks. And we're going to try and see if we can get it, you know, for multiple weeks or months. And that will be the start on, you know, enabling this technology, which I think will be key for really getting kind of ultra long distance space flight. You know, eventually we're going to need it, but we've created a near term application, relatively near term, in looking at it for Mars. We're also looking at missions to the asteroid belt, the moons of Mars stuff. So various destinations within our solar system. And we think it'll help you get to those destinations faster, cheaper, and then you'll have, you know, other resources that can be pre-positioned at those sites.
And in addition to pre-positioning some of those resources, just the sheer weight saving, less food and consumables, the limitation of the footprint, maybe, of each passenger means that you're going to have more room on the ship to take some of the equipment that you need in order to really colonize Mars. Is that also in your thinking? So in other words, if you reduce just the overall activity level of some of the astronauts, you're going to have more room on board the ship to take more gear and more things that they're going to need once they get.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So we've looked at a couple different ways of how to basically leverage this benefit or use this margin. So we've designed kind of early missions, and an early mission to Mars is probably going to be from 4 to 8 passengers. It's kind of the crew complement. So we've applied it in those sort of scenarios and using technologies that would, you know, be available in, say, the mid-2030s timeframe. We've used the same technology that we're developing to send 100 people to Mars, which is ultimately where we're going to have to get if we need to settle or want to have sustained presence or colonize Mars. You need to be able to send people in those sort of numbers. The opportunities to travel to Mars only occur about every 26 months. So you can't just constantly send people. So you kind of go in, you know, kind of caravans. But, you know, the benefit of our technology is that it's easily scalable from whether you're talking about 4 or hundreds of passengers. We can use that same technology and get equal benefit at those different scales. So ultimately, I think it's, you know, it's a long-term capability that we're investing in and will enable that.
So let's go back for just a couple of centuries. And when the British first colonized the United States in Jamestown and Plymouth, it seemed like they landed about 100 people. And so it seems like that number that you're throwing out, that 100 number, or 120, 140, whatever it is, that's really what we need in order to kind of sustain a development and really begin this kind of this process of planting a flag and getting ourselves established in an area.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's about, you know, kind of where we came up with that number, you know, looking at historically how many people does it take to kind of, you know, just have a critical mass. You're going to lose people during the mission or during the stay. You kind of want to have a variety, you know, in the long term of kind of genetic diversity. You know, you'll have problems with, blood supplies or organ transplants and things. So not sure what, you know, what that critical number necessarily is, but, you know, it's more than four or eight, which is fine for these science expeditionary type missions. But when you're talking about a self-sustaining capability and presence, you're going to need to be in the hundreds. And a lot of the investments or capabilities right now that we're working are not necessarily eyed towards that or are going to be scalable. The mass just continues to grow for all these systems to the point that it just becomes infeasible stuff. So we need to have something to kind of compress the human burden during that transit phase and stuff and be able to position all the resources out, you know, separate them from the crew transfer.
So you have a PhD. I would imagine you have MDs at SpaceWorks really studying the process as we might emerge from this stasis, right? And what's that like? What's that telling you?
Okay. In terms of, the resources or MDs and such. So SpaceWorks is primarily engineering, and that's aerospace and electrical systems engineers, mechanical engineers. So we've really been kind of background and focus has been on the engineering type solutions. And that's what, you know, really kind of seeing the limits of those got us looking on the medical side. So there's got to be something more, an area there that we can push to improve the engineering aspect. So my medical team is I have a number of researchers that are supporting me, and they range from experts in animal hibernation. To have researchers at the Mayo Clinic that I'm working with. I have kind of practicing physicians that are actively putting people in, we call it therapeutic hypothermia, mm-hmm. where you cool the body down and, you know, dealing with people with these injuries on a day-to-day basis mm-hmm. and such. So I kind of have a mix of, you know, there's definitely a lot of inspiration and models and learning that we're looking at from the animal world. And trying to understand exactly how certain animals hibernate and what, you know, biological processes are going on to kind of practicing researchers in the field to very applied people. So that's that part of my team is kind of put together the kind of best experts that I can find out there in this area.
So just as the Soviet Union many years ago launched their Sputnik series, and before that they had launched rocketry with animals. Are we at a point where we actually have to launch these, or can that be duplicated in a setting that's still on Earth and still give you the same amount of research that you need in order to arrive at a good medical decision about the outcomes from this kind of travel?
Yeah, and that's another kind of a nice area I like on this technology is there is a lot of ground-based or terrestrial research that we can conduct, as well as case studies from, the medical world of, from thousands of people that have undergone similar like processes. So we can leverage all of that work and data and understanding. But ultimately, yes, we will need to get into the space environment and test this out and perfect this technology. So we see a transition from current, animal evaluations and models and continuing to like push that sort of research and understanding to the human, more extensive human trials on the ground. And then ultimately, though, in space, likely on the space station is where we'd want to, is a great platform for that, microgravity and, really perfect the technology that we need here. So it'll be a roadmap, and that's one of our activities under this new grant with NASA is what are the steps and what's kind of the logical process and timeframes for developing it, and are there any challenges? What are going to be the roadblocks? Whether that's you know, pure medical. We don't have a particular equipment or a facility to, are there any ethical concerns, stuff. So it kind of runs the gamut, and we're trying to identify those with our team and just outlining a vision there.
Well, not likely to be under your NASA grant. NASA, though, is famous for having multiple side benefits that come from their research. Would one of the applications possibly be the travel here on Earth, trips that would go to China from the U.S. or from Australia? Could you put me to sleep for some of that, Dr. Bradford?
Yeah, we definitely are thinking about that. High-speed or hypersonic point-to-point is another project area we have at SpaceWorks and have a lot of interest in, and have pursued that various concepts with a number of customers. You know, there's a lot of current interest in the world in that. Mm-hmm. But on our kind of stasis type technology, some of them, you know, the military has an interest in this for, you know, it basically can buy you some time for an injured warfighter to get them to a proper care facility. So if you can start administering it on the scene and kind of put them in a, put a person or a soldier in a reduced, you know, in this metabolic stasis, that may buy you many hours to transport them out of the field and get them to a, you know, the best medical care they can find. Mm-hmm. So there's that. There's applications potentially that we're exploring for benefit organ transplantation, where, you know, that is a major problem with basically just the time frames required to find a match and availability of an organ. Would we be able to benefit either on the donor side or the recipient side and kind of extend those time frames so that we can, you know, basically have a lot longer window for moving the organs around and getting them to, you know, the best match and stuff. So they're very compressed. Oftentimes that's just an unmet need, strictly because of the time frames and the ability to find those proper donors. So we see that as a very near-term application and potential for this.
Hollywood certainly is all about duplicating successes. And I've seen the movie Passengers. I imagine you have too. It was wonderful. I would imagine that you're probably going to be busy here with some more work that's going to come your way as a result of some of this technology. Can't you just imagine that there's just so many more great stories to be told that would involve this kind of same technology stasis?
Yes. Yeah, I do. And that's why, yeah, I really I enjoyed the movie. Because they, you know, really took the time to kind of explore this, what's typically jumped over in science fiction. You know, you leave, everybody's buttoned up, and then miraculously it's 100 years have passed and you're waking up, and there's kind of no middle ground. But what occurs in that time frame, there's real scenarios that we have to address, and from the engineering and the medical side of what could happen if there was an impact, a meteor impact, or something did go wrong with the ship en route to Mars. You know, we have to have these emergency wake scenarios. So we're evaluating how quickly can we warm somebody up, make sure they have, you know, their cognitive functions and ability to respond to an event, you know, event or an emergency stuff. So really exploring, that aspect in the movie and seeing that, one scenario was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it makes for great entertainment, certainly, but I think what's most important about it is it does make for safer, far less taxing activity for crew members, and so we very much appreciate your work. We very much appreciate your time. Dr. John Bradford from SpaceWorks has been here with us talking a little bit about his work and some of that application in the movie Passengers. Dr. Bradford, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
I'll be talking to you soon. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
My thanks to Dr. John Bradford from SpaceWorks for joining us, for all of his great information, his hard work, his science, his dedication. My thanks especially go to Sony and NASA. I just have to tell you again, the movie Passengers is excellent. You'll enjoy it. The real science is exactly what we need to be seeing. So thanks, Sony. Thanks very much to all for their help.